History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. As we approach America's 250th anniversary, now might be the time to go back and learn how we got here. With more than 200 episodes, you can binge your way, decade by decade, defining event to defining event, from the founding into the 20th century. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
David Cobb is a college basketball and college football writer at CBS Sports. Also a role player here at 92.9 FM ESPN with me Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on Jeffrey Wright and Company on Thursdays. On X, David W. Cobb. David, how's it going?
Hey, good, man. I got some breaking news, though, just coming across right now. I don't know if you've seen this, but there's a prominent former Memphis offensive lineman out in the public saying that he does not want Memphis to go to the MAC.
Yes. Okay, thank you for appreciate you bringing this up. I got a message or a tweet from a listener saying, I'm a Toledo alum. I'd love to see Memphis in the MAC for all sports. I know it's not great for basketball, but I'd love some action. And I only have one response to that. I do love Maction as much as the next guy, but if that were to happen, I'd quit my job, crawl into a hole, and never be heard from again. Is that a fair response? I think that's a fair response. If Memphis ended up in the MAC, I mean, that would be disastrous. I don't agree with this guy. I just don't.
That's very nice of him to say that, though. Like, you know, he wants. It's nice to know that somebody wants you. You know, the MAC, they would roll out the red carpet for Memphis. You think the American gives you a sweetheart deal now, boy?
Well,
the MAC, they would wrap your arms around you.
The Pac-12 has sort of expressed interest and made it clear they kind of want you in football.
Option. Here in the MAC, can you imagine? Can you imagine Memphis going to the MAC? That would be like Texas up and deciding, you know what, 15 years after we flirted with the Pac-12, we're going to go to the Pac-12, you know? It would be like, oh, my gosh. But no, I just thought that was hilarious.
I mean, you know,
somebody actually said that to you.
It's great to be wanted, David, but this is, you know, and I hate to be offensive. I hope this doesn't offend too many people, but that's like being wanted by the ugly friend. Like, I appreciate your interest. I'm not interested in the same way. I apologize for it. But
does the ugly friend have a good personality? The MAC has a great
That's a great point. That's a great point. But, you know, that's sort of like, if all else fails, that's where you land, you know. And I don't even think for Memphis, that's an all else fails, that's where you land. I don't think there's any reasonable situation where that would ever happen.
Yeah, well, but so what you're saying is, if that's your only option, you'd rather stay single than date the MAC.
Yes, absolutely. That's fair, right? Like, I'm not being unreasonable, am I?
No, I know. No, 100%, man. I'm just yeah, being funny because I just thought it was funny. Yeah. Like, I thought it was a funny tweet that, like, somebody tweeted that to you, and then I thought your response was really funny. So,
well, and now if it does happen, though, I have to follow through on what I just said? Do we hold me accountable? If Memphis ended up playing some action, do I have to, you know, quit my job, crawl into a hole, and never be heard from again?
I'm going to create like a fake Ross Dellinger Twitter account and then tweet that Memphis is joining the MAC. And then I'm going to send you like a job ad. I'm going to send you a Chick-fil-A job ad and it'll be great.
Well, I could maybe we could get a bump in my salary if I end up at Chick-fil-A, right? Because you have connections.
Well, I know some people.
Yeah,
I know
some people. You do. So. You do know people. Hey, what do you think about Memphis and obviously the Magic playing over in Berlin and London and not playing an MLK Day game in Memphis? What's your reaction to that? Do you like it? Do you hate it? Where are you at on it?
Well, I like the fact that they're going to Europe and they're a part of something that's really cool, going overseas, taking the Memphis brand, the Grizzlies brand, the stardom of Ja Morant, et cetera, overseas. Like, I think that's a good thing. But I always, like, kind of thought the Grizzlies playing the MLK Day game on national TV, the Civil Rights Symposium, the spotlight of that day, and turning what is one of the worst things to ever happen in the city of Memphis into – you know, something that is really special and commemorative and all that. Like, I really like that. So, I mean, I guess this will just be a one-year thing in all likelihood. So I would assume they can go back to doing the MLK Day thing in the future. But so long as that's the case, then sure, go for it, right? But, like, I'd hate it if the special, like, spotlight showcase MLK Day game sort of went away forever. Hopefully that's not what this is bringing about. But, yeah, aside from that, sure. I mean, going to Europe and whatever. I mean, I don't know that it's – is it really going to, like, bring you – millions of new
no,
fans and increase
won't.
Your value and blah, blah, blah. I don't know, but like exposure, I guess. I mean, it's cool.
Yeah, the NBA sort of
really
probably pigeonholed.
Right?
So. The NBA pigeonholed you into it, and you have to do it at least for the year. I just hate that you're missing out on two, in my opinion, big opportunities at FedEx Forum, home games and crowds that could show up. One, of course, is MLK Day game. The MLK Day game, like that's always near a sellout. And then on top of that, you're missing out on, at least for next season, the return trip from Desmond Bain. I feel like that could bring some fans out. And I know this was probably in the books before the Desmond Bain trade was made, but that stinks as well. You know, I want to be positive about it. I want to like it. I really do, because it is a cool thing to be part of, like, the international outreach of the National Basketball Association. But I feel like you're missing out on what you could potentially create at home, and that doesn't feel great. We're here for the city of Memphis, and the city of Memphis first.
I agree with that. At a time when the gate is like really important, home attendance is under the microscope. You lose a big home attendance game. The Desmond Bane return game; those things are not ideal. I just wish that why couldn't they have found a different time on the calendar to do that? I don't know, but. I mean, yeah, on its own, sure. I mean, it's cool. I just hate the timing of it and some of the circumstances of it and whatever else. But, I don't know. Like, I'm a little surprised. Like, do you know, are there other games that are a part of this Europe initiative? Or did they just randomly choose the Grizzlies and the Magic? Because, I saw the Grizzlies angle on this today, but I didn't know, like, are the Lakers going to play in Europe too? Or is this just, like, a Grizzlies?
Grizzlies, Magic for this year. There's going to be 6 regular season games over the next 3 years, so 2 a year. Grizzlies and Magic got it this year.
Okay.
So I guess next year, somebody else. Next year, year after that, of course, somebody else. I do like that they're trying to branch out, taking a page out of the NFL's book. But, you know, I hate that it had to be the Grizzlies year one. But we'll see.
I mean, if Kansas State and Iowa State, for crying out loud, are playing football in Europe, then I guess the NBA should go play basketball in Europe, you know?
Right.
I mean, we got two of the most random, like, heartland college football teams beginning the season over there. So it's probably long overdue that the NBA go over there. And especially with the growth of the game in Europe, I mean, it's crazy right now. I did a story about 2 weeks ago now on the influx of international talent into college basketball. And obviously, you look around the NBA right now, look at the All-Star game rosters, the All-NBA rosters. It's so, so international. And that's not going away. That's only going to be enhanced as more and more of these college players come over for their you know, whatever that next step is for them before the NBA draft. More and more of that is going to be in college. And so you're going to get more and more NBA fans in Europe because, oh, this guy's from my hometown. Or, like, this guy started out playing for the club team in my city, you know. And so I think there's an opportunity there. And from that standpoint, I think it makes a lot of sense and is a great idea for the Grizzlies to kind of get in on the front end of that, to be one of the first over there to really be spotlighted and highlighted, you know, by the NBA. So from that standpoint, I think it's a really good thing.
All right, now we have 3 Saturdays until week 0. You already mentioned the Iowa State Kansas State game. That should be fun. Week 0, you know, besides that, not much juice, but I think that adds the amount of juice that I would like for week 0, right? Like that game is better than what we've gotten the past couple of years, I feel like, in week 0.
Well, I don't know. I mean, last year that Florida State Boston College game turned out to be pretty good, if I'm remembering that correctly, from week 0. It was a bad day for Mike Norvell.
No, it was Georgia. Tech?
Oh, you're right. Yeah, it was Georgia Tech. And then I think Boston College beat Florida State the next week.
Yes. Before Memphis.
I really think with how long the season goes now in college football, with the national title game being decided in mid to late January, it would be great if we could just go ahead and move week 1 to week 0 rather than making it this weird thing where only teams that are making the trip to Hawaii play in week 0. It doesn't really make any sense to have such a soft opening at a time when you have the calendar available to you. I mean, there are no NFL regular season games, and that's part of what makes week one such a hit and why they have all these blockbuster matchups on week one that go into Sunday and go into Monday. Well, you have a whole nother week available to you there with week zero that I don't feel like we're fully capitalizing on. So yeah, sure. Like, I'll watch Kansas State and Iowa State, but wouldn't it be a whole heck of a lot better if we had Clemson and LSU in week zero? And then we had a whole nother week after that without NFL to, you know, at a time when we're looking for every possible revenue source in college sports, you've got an opportunity with week zero to isolate yourself from the NFL even more and be even more of a draw at a time in the sports calendar where there really isn't anything going on. And I don't feel like week zero really takes advantage of that.
Yeah, I'm not a week zero fan, but week one is going to be absolutely insane. Is this – so you have Alabama, Florida State, LSU, Clemson, Notre Dame, Miami, Michigan, Oklahoma. I mean, when we look at week one and what it could potentially be, is this the best we've seen in quite a while?
Yeah, I think, like, for example, like Texas and Ohio State, such a fun matchup because it's the first look at Arch Manning and the first look at Julian Saint. It's the reigning national champions versus the team a lot of people think will win this year's national championship. So that's a blockbuster right there. I'm so fascinated by that quarterback matchup. But then on the other end of the spectrum, like LSU versus Clemson, Death Valley versus Death Valley, that's going to be fantastic because it's the Heisman Trophy campaign kickoff for Cade Klubnik, for Garrett Nussmeier. And whoever loses that game, boy, they face a long uphill battle to get back into playoff contention. So I love the fact that we have stakes attached to these week one games. Yes, in the 12-team playoff era, you do have the ability to recover from an early loss and still make the playoff. But, you know, for some of these teams in particular that have difficult schedules, you lose week one, you know, the odds are pretty much stacked against you from there on out.
Do you think we'll lose that going into the future? The SEC seems like they're still wanting to stay at eight games. Obviously, if they go to nine games, it could be a little bit different. But do you think we're going to lose some of this going into the future? Because it feels like we've lost some of it already. But if the SEC sticks at eight games, we're still going to continue down this path of, okay, they're gonna want to add more FCS teams. They're going to want to add more low Division I teams.
Yeah, if they go to 16 as well for the playoff, because the playoff at 12 now is still fairly selective, and there's a lot of incentive built into that 12-team bracket. Hey, if I finish in the top four, I get a bye. If I finish in the top eight, I get to host my first game. Those sorts of things. But if we expand it to 16, there's no more buys. There's more teams with more leeway, more ability to make it into the field with three losses. I don't like that. I like the fact that there were no three loss teams in the bracket last year. But of course, we expand it once, we got to expand it again. It's the same thing that we're seeing right now with the NCAA men's basketball tournament. We can't leave what's perfectly fine and enjoyable and great alone. We got to figure out a way to squeeze every dollar out of it. So I talk about making week zero a more attractive sort of thing on the TV schedule, right? Because there's a way to enhance college football and enhance the product without expanding the playoff again.
Right.
So anyway, a little bit of a tangent there. Yeah, I think we could lose some of the game because, I mean, especially if we get the Big Ten's plan, and there's some positives to their plan, but their plan also basically locks up 13 of the 16 or 12 of the 16
right.
bids for whoever finishes in the top two or top four of their conference, which means like the non-conference games wouldn't even matter. So that would be horrible. Like that element of it is not preferable, I don't think.
Yeah,
so,
the potential for an 8-4 Big Ten team being the last team getting an automatic qualifier does not sit right with me, never has. Since they've started this idea.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the upside to that is there's no disincentive to play high-caliber, marquee non-conference games, right? Because it's like, oh, who cares? We'll schedule Texas and Oklahoma and whoever else, right? Because it doesn't matter, like, if we lose, so long as we finish in the top wherever in
right.
our conference, like, we're fine. But anyway, no, I've said this to you multiple times, but it's worth reiterating. As we get closer and closer to this season, which could be the last with a 12-team bracket, give the thing some time to breathe, man. Stay at 12, like for at least a couple of years, figure out, get a larger sample size before you go and blow the whole thing up and further disrupt what is it already a very disruptive time in college sports.
All right, now fall camp's rolling along and Auburn's getting going. Did you see Hugh Freeze today? He made some waves at the podium. All right, first we'll start with the length and girth comment. He said you need length and girth in the SEC. Agree or disagree? I would tend to say agree. He needs to be careful with using, you know, flagrant language though. You know his past and how uncomfortable it is. Him using length and girth is just uncomfortable to me.
Hugh Freeze in particular. Wow. I mean, just wow. I mean, this guy is I need to be careful. I need to tread lightly here. But let's just say I don't fully understand, like, why he's getting so much grace in his attempt to rebuild Auburn. More grace than Brian Harsin, right? Like, I just don't get
understand it. Here's my thought, though. Isn't it sort of the one of us idea? He's Southern football, you know, purebred. Even though he's gone through all those things, Brian Harsin was potato boy to all those Auburn fans. Like, that to me is the biggest difference in grace. Like, Brian Harsin was not one of them in Auburn, Alabama. At least they feel like Hugh Freeze has some semblance of understanding of the Southeastern Conference and the Southeast, where Brian Harsin didn't.
He knows how to recruit, Gabe. He knows how to recruit.
He knows how to get on that recruiting trail. He doesn't. He has not done that very well this offseason. Just wanted to mention that.
I know. Well, yeah, I mean, he started out hot and he got everybody off his back, and now he's playing golf and, like, nobody even, you know, like, it's not, he's not getting the heat that he deserves for the results that he's produced and for the, I mean, honestly, the recruiting is, like, okay, better than it was under Harsin. All right. But, like, I don't know. Like, there's a lot riding on Jackson Arnold. There's a lot riding on, you know, like Cam Coleman, who we all expect to have a breakout sophomore season. But at the same time, like, I don't know. We haven't seen it from that Auburn offense in so long. And I feel the same way about Hugh Freeze, kind of that I feel about Gus Malzahn. And I got into this with you, I guess, on Monday.
Yeah.
You know, I just feel like the game has passed. A lot of these offensive coaches in college football right now have got to reinvent themselves. And I'm paying close attention to Tennessee when I have that conversation as well, because last couple of seasons, every defense they play is dropping eight. And, they, you know, there's no way to generate explosive plays against a defense that drops eight. Yeah, you can run the football a little better than maybe you did previously. But, I mean, you know, Tennessee is an offense in that system that Josh Heupel and Jeff Lebby and, you know, so many others now around the country run. Like, anyway, so I mean, there's just so much, so many questions that I have about the quote-unquote offensive gurus right now. And Hugh Freeze is right in that generation kind of with Gus Malzahn, where it's like, man, like 20 teens, like, sure, yeah, you had it going. Now I'm not so sure you do.
Well, we've gotten back little by little, and everybody thought, you know, 5 years ago that it would never go away. But we've gotten back to more high safeties and more dink and dunk and more sustained drives. That's what has success. Georgia did it 2 years in a row. Michigan did it. I thought Ohio State, for the most part, did it. They created some explosive plays, but, like, look at their quarterback last year in Will Howard. That's not some big play quarterback by any stretch of the imagination. We've gotten back to that, so I get your concerns, no doubt about it. Like, Josh Heupel last year, that offense took a step back, not only just because of quarterback play, just because of the style that Josh Heupel runs. Yeah, Dylan Sampson had a really good year, but, like, we know from history, Josh Heupel's not a guy offensively who likes to take a whole bunch of time to go score. You have to do that, though, in today's day and age in the SEC and the Big Ten. You just have to. The explosives are a premium, and they just don't happen as much.
Absolutely. And you look at the national title winners. Like, yes, obviously Ohio State could sling it around, but you go and look at the back-to-back Georgia titles. You go and look at the Michigan title. You go and look, by and large, at Ohio State. Like, again, yes, clearly they had great receivers. I'm not discounting that at all. But it's a whole lot different now than it was when Joe Burrow was slinging it around to Ja'Marr Chase and when Mac Jones was slinging it to Devontae Smith. All right? Like, the game has changed over the last 7-8 years. And I think that some of these offensive masterminds have got to recalibrate. And when you're talking about a almost 60-year-old Hugh Freeze or a however old Gus Malzahn is, like, what appetite do you have to reinvent yourself at that stage in your career? Not to mention, what ability do you have to do that? I think Josh Heupel can do it. I think he can lean more on his defense. He did last year. He made the playoff last year with a C-plus offense, you know, by his standards. So guys that, you know, are in that age range, I don't know. Like, I have a little bit more confidence in them than I do it, than I do in a Hugh Freeze. You know, I mean, like, I don't blame the guy at all for wanting to play golf. Dude, you've made a lot of money. You've worked for decades in this profession. It's a tough profession. Your family's been in the spotlight. Like, there's nothing wrong with wanting to play golf. I just think it's hard to operate a high-level SEC program of the Auburn standard when, you know, yeah, it's been several years now since you've really shown that you have the touch. So,
yeah,
you need length and girth, Gabe, though,
yes,
for sure.
And this sure. this conversation we're having, though, about, you know, the recent national champion winners and how their offense looked, this is why I am so damn high on Penn State. We talk about their pass catchers, mm-hmm. losing Tyler Warren, all that. It doesn't necessarily matter all that much when you have Catron Allen and Nick Singleton in year three together. And Drew Aller is a dinky belt guy. He can use the middle of the field. Like, when we watched that Michigan championship, I mean, pass catcher's fine. Sure, you had Colston Loveland, but Roman Wilson was your best receiver. Like, I don't think that's that far off of a Kyron Hudson that Penn State has right now. Right. So this is one of the reasons why I've been so high on Penn State, even dating back to the end of the season last year, right? It just feels like they have the prototypical in the past 5 years team that can really go make that happen. They have enough returning talent. They play the style of offense you need. They always have a sturdy defense. Just feels like it makes sense.
I would also throw Notre Dame into that category.
Yep.
The big difference, obviously, CJ Carr taking over for Riley Leonard at quarterback. Redshirt freshman, so you have questions there versus Penn State, who has an established guy in Drew Aller. But, I mean, it's either Penn State or Notre Dame for the best running back room. Notre Dame's running back room is right there. Their defense is going to be just filthy. That's Marcus Freeman's specialty. They're going to be elite on that side of the ball again. I think they have all the hallmarks and the makings of a potential title team as well. So, we talked about this, but what I love about this college football season is the openness of it. Like, people think Ohio State and Texas are gonna be great again, but we're gonna find out real quick in week one if those quarterbacks can play.
Yeah.
And then you got these teams that are more complete. Like, because you look at Texas, Ohio State, yeah, they might have the highest ceiling quarterbacks with Julian Sain and Arch Manning in theory, anyway. But Penn State, Notre Dame, like, we know how good those defenses are. We know that personnel. There's no questions about, you know, the things that define them in the way that there is for Texas and for Ohio State. And so I just think there's a lot of possibilities with this season. There's 9 or 10 teams that I'd be willing to throw down, you know, a buck on to maybe win the national title because I think it's that open.
Yeah, and I know we went off on a tangent there, but the other Hugh Freeze thing from today, he acknowledged that he did ask DJ Durkin, the defensive coordinator, to go easier on Jackson Arnold in the spring, because he said the number one priority for practice is for our quarterback to leave the field confident. That is not, I'm sorry. I played football for a long time. I've been following football for a long time. I've seen pressers. I've seen the ideas behind the scenes that coaches have about how to run their program. That's something I've never seen. And that is not, to me, a positive thing. You need to let your quarterback learn. And if you're taking it easy on him, I don't think that's the way you do it. The bullets are going to be flying a lot faster on a Saturday.
Yeah, man, that's deeply concerning. Like, I hadn't even seen that yet, but that's a red flag. I mean, I understand he wants to build the guy's confidence up. The guy got destroyed at Oklahoma last year. I get that. But you're going to install a fake sense of, like, what it takes to be successful if you have the defense in practice go soft on the guy. The only way you're going to be able to build true confidence.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
Build, you know, true rapport with your offense is to go out there and do it against the ones with DJ Durkin throwing every look in the book at them. You know, I mean, because whoever they play this year is gonna show them an easier version of of their defense to try to build Jackson Arnold's confidence up? No, I think every defense they're going to play this year is looking at that quote and, you know, licking their chops.
Right.
Oh, man, this guy's fragile. This guy, because he was last year. I mean, honestly, he was fragile at Oklahoma. He was fragile. He was a redshirt freshman kind of getting thrown into the fire, and I understand all that. But, you know, he broke down mentally. And, you know, so on the one hand, I understand what Hugh Freeze is trying to do. But, you know, this is big boy football, man. Like, this is, you know, a lot of people would argue the SEC is the best league outside the NFL, right? Outside the AFC or the NFC, right? Big Ten can maybe make a claim to that last couple of seasons, but I don't know that that's going to fly. That's a concerning thing to hear coming out of a head coach's mouth.
No doubt about it. Well, David, I appreciate it. We will talk again on Friday. Thanks for joining.
Yeah, man, sounds good.
Yes, sir. He is David Cobb, college basketball, college football writer for CBS Sports. Joins Gabe Kuhn Show Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and Jeffrey Wright and company as the company on Thursdays. You can find him on X, David W. Cobb. Now, we need to take a trip around the National Football League, so stick around for that right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. It's time to take a trip around the National Football League. Connor, hit it. Trey Hendrickson has officially reported to Bengals camp. Now, it is being reported that the Bengals and Hendrickson's agent are close on a deal. Length and total value of the contract are nearly agreed upon, but you know what they can't agree upon, Connor? You guessed it. Guaranteed money. They can't figure that out. Just get the guaranteed money in there. Figure it out. You need him out there. You were a bad pass rush unit, a bad defense as is. You were 25th in the NFL last year. That's the reason you were 9-8 with the leading passer, leading passing touchdown guy, leading receiver, leading receiving touchdown guy, and the leading sack getter. That's why you were bad. So get your best playmaker out there. Stop being held up on guaranteed money. Stop it. It's pointless. It's ridiculous. But I will say from Hendrickson's side, this is a show of good faith. He's holding in instead of holding out. I think the hold out process, obviously you lose money as a player. You're tired of losing $50,000 a day. That's why you show back up. He ended up losing $250,000 through this process. But holding in is, I think, what you need to do. You show up, you're at least in front of the guys. You can get back to the negotiating table. You can figure some things out along the way. If you are an NFL player and you have a contract extension and negotiation that you're going through, I believe being at the facility is the best way to go about it. You don't have to participate, but being there is the way we do business now in the National Football League. Hey, Anthony Richardson, have you been seeing this stuff, Connor? Have you been seeing this? Reports are very positive at training camp for Anthony Richardson. Apparently, according to multiple reports, he's taking charge of the quarterback battle against Daniel Jones. Now, it's Daniel Jones and Anthony Richardson. You're like, okay, well, that battle, it's not that strong. Like, it is what it is. Shane Steichen calls the battle neck and neck. He's not trying to show his hand, but multiple people have said that Anthony Richardson looks new. He looks improved. He's lost some weight. He feels comfortable. He's being accurate with the football. He's spreading the ball around, and that shouldn't be all that surprising. It's now year three for him in this offense. Daniel Jones is going on year one. He's got to learn some things. In my opinion, if Daniel Jones wins this quarterback battle when it's all said and done, that says way too much, way more than it needs to say about Anthony Richardson. He has been there in this offense, has some level of understanding of what it takes. If he cannot beat out Daniel Jones, who spent years and years and years with the Giants and never figured that out, if he can't beat Daniel Jones, who has only been there for one offseason, that's really bad. Now, I think Anthony Richardson has all it takes to be a really good quarterback, 24 years of age, 6'4", 245 pounds, ran a 4.4 at the combine, really good arm. I just need to see it come to fruition. And here's the thing. If it does happen and he is a solid quarterback in the National Football League, at least keeps that Colts offense on pace, that Colts team could be pretty dangerous. That Colts team could be pretty damn good. Jonathan Taylor at running back. You have a really good offensive line. Bernard Raymond, Quentin Nelson, Braden Smith. Michael Pittman Jr. is a decent wide receiver. One on the defensive side of the ball, you look at that defensive line. Grover Stewart, DeForest Buckner, good way to start there. Zaire Franklin has led the league in tackles before. Good secondary. They added Charvarius Ward from the 49ers this offseason. That team could be very, very sneaky as long as they get decent quarterback play. I'm not betting on it, but I will say It should be a positive development that Anthony Richardson is looking good at training camp. Ravens tight end Isaiah Likely has a small foot fracture. We tried to figure that out. He rolled his ankle. They thought that he was going to be out for an extended period of time, and then they sort of walked that back, and now they figured out he had a fracture after doing imaging. And they say if all goes well, Likely will be expected to return early in the season. And it's still possible he will be in the lineup for their September 7th opener at Buffalo against the Bills. We shall see. All right, we already talked about the Micah Parsons situation and the extension that they have yet to ink, but they have another problem on their hands with another star. He already has his deal, but Trayvon Diggs, their cornerback, their star cornerback, all-pro cornerback. They docked him $500,000 worth of salary. Now, it's because he rehabbed elsewhere this offseason from the injury he sustained last year with his ACL and his knee. So the team exercised its right within his contract to dock him and fine him $500,000. And Diggs reportedly has hurt feelings, and I don't blame him. This, to me, seems tone-deaf from the Dallas Cowboys. Not surprising by any stretch of the imagination that they would go this direction. They think they have the best doctors. Trayvon Diggs, I can guarantee you, did everything he could do away from the facility with all the best doctors he can afford them. He has a $97 million contract. I'm sure he did everything he could to get back on the field. But this is what Stephen Jones had to say. He certainly paid a price for not being here, talking about the $500,000. He told this to The Athletic, of course. But then he went on, but we're paying a price too, because we felt like he might be further along had he done his rehab here. He may differ with that, but had he done his rehab here, we feel strongly that he might be further along. That's in the best interest of the team and the organization that comes with getting a big contract, which he received. I don't get them. I don't get it. You guys are valuable. You guys have money. You don't need to fine this guy $500,000. It means a lot more to him, that $500,000, than it does to you. I'm sure he rehabbed just as well away from the facility as he did in the facility. You're just taking something out of his contract to be a pain in his ass.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
And the more they keep doing this, Connor, and I've mentioned this on multiple occasions, the more they keep doing this, whether it's the Micah Parsons situation, the Trayvon Diggs situation, or waiting too long to pay CeeDee Lamb, waiting too long to pay Dak Prescott, the more they keep doing these things, the more unlikely it becomes that any free agents or any outside talent signs with them. No one cares about the allure of the star. No one cares that, oh, I'm playing for the Dallas Cowboys. No one cares about that anymore. They care about how they're being treated, what type of money they're making, and their chances to win a title. And right now you're showing you're not willing to pay all of that money in a timely manner. You're showing you don't treat your team very well. And by God, like, you're not, and you haven't been since the 90s, a title contender. So, like, you're just – they're doing – horrible things to themselves. All these self-inflicted wounds are killing the Dallas Cowboys. And as always, I'll tell you, it starts there at the top with Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones. But that will do it for a trip around the National Football League. We'll come back and wrap up this hour with Small Talk on the other side, right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.